Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Prescott Daily Courier for Sunday, April 27th, 2025. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Front page articles include jury duty ins, outs, and what to expect if you are called, Prescott Recreation Services Director Joe Baines to leave legacy of community partnership, and Prescott High Food Forest, now home to 8-foot peace pole, thanks to Frontier Rotary Club. Now the stories behind the headlines. Jury duty ins, outs, and what to expect if you are called. Editor's note, this is the first in a series of articles about jury duty in Yavapai County. By Deborah Winters, The Daily Courier. To serve on a jury is a civic duty and can be an experience you'll never forget. All Americans have a right to a trial by their peers, a jury. Per the Constitution, and qualified citizens in Arizona have an obligation to serve on juries unless they are excused because of certain circumstances. In Yavapai County, a juror must be 18 years old, a U.S. citizen and resident of Yavapai County, have no felony convictions unless civil rights have been restored, and not be deemed mentally incompetent. As one might think, a lot of legwork transpires behind the scenes to gather potential jurors' names, and Yavapai County is one of the first courts to utilize a survey process. Twice annually, the clerk's office sends out 18,000 questionnaires to qualify potential jurors. This information is entered into the computer system, which takes 2 to 3 months, creating a jury pool to receive summonses for jury duty, said Donna McQuality, Clerk of Superior Court in Yavapai County. And when the questionnaires are returned to us, we then have information on prospective jurors, McQuality said, referring to the opportunity to serve as a privilege and a right. What happens behind the scenes is interesting in itself. When a case is ready for trial, the judge contacts the jury office to send out summons for a pool. The number of jurors summoned depends on the type and duration of the trial. Selection of those being summoned is randomly done by the computer, at which time judge and attorneys then create a trial-specific questionnaire. The summons is accompanied by a letter from the judge and contains a link to complete the trial-specific questionnaire. However, if a prospective juror is unable to complete the trial questionnaire online or misses the deadline, a paper copy will be provided on the morning of the first day of trial. Some people are excused based on their answers. They are then told their name will be put back into the jury pool and may be summoned for another trial in the future. Some people are excused based on their answers. They are then told they could be called upon again to serve on another trial, said Rondi Hagen, Deputy Jury Commissioner. The day of the trial. It starts off with orientation at the courthouse as jurors learn what their duties are. Those who would experience hardship in serving on the dates covered by the trial may request to be excused by calling the jury office or setting forth the hardship in the trial questionnaire. At the time of orientation, jurors are given forms for waiver of mileage and a letter for their workplace as proof appeared for jury duty. In 2022, state officials created a fund that pays a qualified individual up to $300 per day of lost earnings. For people who couldn't serve because they couldn't pay their bills can now serve, said Judge John J. Knapper, presiding judge for Yavapai County. And if a juror resides 100 miles or more from the courthouse, they are reimbursed for a hotel, which is arranged by a court administrator. Bring a suitcase the first day in case you are picked. Meals, though, are not covered during the trial, but if jurors are deliberating on a verdict for a longer length of time, lunch is provided. After orientation, the judge and the attorneys begin trial and panelment proceedings. The number of jurors chosen to decide the issues, including alternates, depends on the nature of the case. Once the jury is impaneled, the judge then will proceed with the trial. The length of time is determined by the judge and attorneys during the pre-trial conferences that are held leading up to the trial date, Hagen explained. It should be duly noted that once you serve, you won't be picked for another 2 years. And those 75 and older can be permanently excused, although surprisingly many choose to continue serving. Some actually call us the day of their 75th birthday to be excused, and others in their 90s continue to serve because they truly enjoy it, McQuality said. And for many receiving the qualification questionnaire, the desire to toss it in the garbage surely goes through everyone's mind. Nevertheless, if you do, you could get called in to fill one out in person, although that rarely happens. We know people have lives, but juries are necessary so fair trials can be done, McQuality said. Never forget. For Carl Lubicich of Prescott Valley, serving on a 7-day murder trial in Cottonwood 4 years ago is something he will never forget. Some people try to get out of jury duty, but I find it so interesting. I think the system works very well. It's an opportunity to learn respect for the system. Everyone should do it at least once, he said. Lubicich remembers the crime being very gruesome, to say the least. Jurors were warned ahead of time for those who wouldn't be able to handle seeing crime scene photos. The judge and the attorneys were all very good and stayed on track, and the bailiff took everything very serious. And even if you didn't like the outcome, you were very respectful of the way the judge set the overall tone and the way it all played out, he added. For Mary Manwaring, serving on a jury was something she too took very seriously. Her experience, however, was a one-week trial that took place in El Centro, California in 1996. A woman was renting homes and a guy staying there stole checks from her, and when she confronted him, he beat her up and put her in the hospital, she said. Back then, I felt we served on the jury with pride because it is our civic duty, and it was also an educational experience for me, said Manwaring of Prescott Valley. The jury took 2 days to deliberate as the court reporter continued to refresh their memories. Upon hearing the case, I actually felt afraid to be around the guy who attacked the woman. But everything was done well, and I felt I was part of something really special, she added. Prescott Recreation Services Director Joe Baines to leave Legacy of Community Partnership by Parker Jones, The Daily Courier. Recreation Services Director Joe Baines is set to retire on May 1st after over a decade of leading Prescott's Recreation Department. Through years of accomplishments, Baines has made an undeniable impact on the city of Prescott and the quality of life for its residents. Baines is originally from Minnesota, but has lived in Arizona since 1984. He is a contractor by trade, but had served on the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board for many years prior to working for the city. He was approached by the city manager in 2011 to lead recreation services. I thought, well, yeah, it's something different, Baines said, and I'd always been really involved. I played in the softball league. I was very involved with the department for a long, long time. So I thought about it and figured at 51 years old, a career change would be kind of fun, and it's been wonderful. He has also long been involved with local nonprofits, including board positions with the Prescott Little League, the Boys and Girl Clubs of Central Arizona, and Yavapai Silent Witness. Baines said much of his work as Recreation Services Director has revolved around partnerships and building teams. He highlighted a number of projects during his tenure that involved intergovernmental agreements, land acquisitions, and community alignment. Both Prescott Mayor Phil Good and City Manager Dallin Kimball remarked on Baines' ability to connect different agencies and individuals to achieve a common goal. Joe Baines has done an exemplary job in his position. There's a long, long laundry list of accomplishments, Good said. He will be sorely missed. I can't say enough about his talent in managing a team. He's just been terrific in his work. In November 2023, Baines facilitated regional partnerships for the city's purchase of 2,284 acres of land around Glassford Hill to be part of the upcoming Glassford Dells Regional Park. The park will total about 4,100 acres and will take in everything east of Highway 89, including Watson Lake, the Granite Dells, and Glassford Hill. Joe's ability to build strong and genuine relationships has been an incredible asset for the city. In other places I have worked, for example, cities and counties have been at odds with federal land agencies, Kimball noted. In Prescott, Joe Baines built partnerships with the Forest Service, Prescott Mountain Bike Alliance, and others to build the Bean Peaks Mountain Bike Trails, which are the first gravity-fed trails in Arizona. That kind of collaboration is what has helped the city build not only Bean Peaks, but hundreds of miles of trails over the last 15 years. Baines also helped the city coordinate a 302-acre purchase of land from the historic Storm Ranch in 2022. This land provided a key link to other Granite Dells open space areas that the city acquired over the years, ensuring Prescott had a robust, well-connected trail system. Good said the purchase would not have been possible without Baines' close relationship with the Seaver family, who owns Storm Ranch. Kimball echoed this sentiment. Joe introduced me to Mrs. Virginia Seaver after I had been in town just a few months. Still somewhat fresh from California, I expected a polite business introduction. Instead, Mrs. Seaver invited us into her kitchen table and offered us something to drink, Kimball said. Joe asked naturally and genuinely about her family and seemed to be aware of what was going on in the lives of Mrs. Seaver's children. It was a master class in representing the city, the spirit of public services, and remembering that city staff are here to serve people and not just deliver services. In addition to fostering the growth of the city's trail network, Baines also focused much of his time on the city's sports facilities. Baines, in 2017, led the establishment of several pickleball courts at Pioneer Park, which has remained a hugely popular pastime for Prescott citizens and tourists alike, even through the COVID-19 pandemic. Baines said while the pandemic was a challenge for everyone, it led to a huge increase in people making use of the city's parks and trails. Not only we were very adamant that we wanted to keep the trails open and keep the bathrooms open, and so we went into extra cleanings. We did everything we could to make it safe for the public, but yet let them enjoy the outdoors. And we really did. Our trail numbers just blew up during COVID, Baines said. And then our department also does all the facilities for the city of Prescott. So that was an adjustment on the fly to do glass barriers and change air filters and all kinds of things that we needed to do. Baines also oversaw the revitalization of the Antelope Hills Municipal Golf Course, which also got a boost in usage during COVID. Additionally, he helped bring outdoor basketball courts to Willow Creek Park in August 2023, rounding out Prescott's sports facilities. Kimball noted that one of the first events he attended in Prescott was at the dedication of the basketball courts. He did not expect how large the crowd would be or how many community leaders attended the event, showcasing how people felt about recreation services and the relationships they had built with Baines. Another working partnership Baines highlighted was with Prescott Unified School District for the Community Nature Center located off Williamson Valley Road, which has launched several programs over the years. That had really gone from a pretty stagnant piece of property to just a thriving teaching environment. I think we had 13,000 school visits last year, Baines said. After he retires, Baines isn't going anywhere too far. He plans to stay in Prescott, play a little more golf, and travel with his wife, who is retiring at the same time. Baines said he will be able to help with the transitional period until his successor, Christy Diaz Trahan, takes over on June 2nd. However, Deputy Director Tim Legler will also be assisting to bridge the gap. I'm still around. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be available if there's any questions, but it's just time for a different chapter in my life, Baines said. I love the organization. I love the city of Prescott. I love the people. It's been my honor and my privilege to be in this position to help our quality of life and help make Prescott a great place to be. Prescott High Food Forest, now home to 8-foot peace pole thanks to Frontier Rotary Club. By Nancy Hudson, The Daily Courier. A swift breeze underneath a clear blue sky in the Prescott High School Food Forest Laboratory at the rear of the campus on Friday afternoon, April 24th, set the stage for a small cadre of students, administrators, and leaders to celebrate a legacy gift to all PHS Badgers, past, present, and future. The Prescott Frontier Rotary Club funded and dedicated to PHS a universal symbol to the ideals of peace, an 8-foot-tall, 4-by-4-inch-wide peace pole. The pole that sports the rotary symbol at its top is decorated with matching square tiles etched in wildflowers and leaves, all painted in hues of yellow, green, and blue. Atop the tiles are large three-dimensional white letters that in five languages, English, French, Spanish, Native Yavapai, and Braille, spell out a five-word phrase promulgated by the Masahisa Goi, the Japanese founder of the International Peace Pole Movement. Saddened by the atomic bomb destruction to the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki that prompted the end of World War II, Goi dedicated his life to seeking peace on Earth. In a moment of prayer, Goi said he was inspired to spread what he considered a powerful divine message now engraved on peace poles around the world. And in the Prescott High School's year-old food forest, may peace prevail on Earth. At the PHS Peace Pole dedication, the Frontier Rotary Club's Peace Pole designer and crafter Robert Wirtz said this project was inspired by the late Rotary District 5495 governor and founder of the district's Peace Builders Network. At the PHS Peace Pole dedication, the Frontier Rotary Club's Peace Pole designer and crafter Robert Wirtz said this project was inspired by the late Rotary District 5495 governor and founder of the district's Peace Builders Network. When the $150,000 Forest Project was launched by the district's Farm to School Program Coordinator Victoria Ellis and her AmeriCorps Vista team a year ago, the Frontier Rotary Club pledged to work with the PHS Interact Club to create and plant a peace pole in the 3,600 square foot biodiverse planting system. Interact is Rotary International's service club for middle and high school age students. The carefully sculpted swath of what once was just a long stretch of dirt and debris at the back of the PHS campus is now home to 25 fruit trees that provide a canopy for perennial flowers, shrubs, berries, and cover crops. The area is designed to serve as an outdoor learning center where teachers can offer instruction in a natural setting, where student groups can volunteer to dig in the dirt or learn how to compost. The food forest space is now equipped with benches suited to students or staff who just want to enjoy a few minutes of peace and tranquility in an otherwise hectic schedule. On the far south side is a circle of benches that now include the Peace Pole dedication plaque. Commended for his many hours of work to design and craft this peace pole in collaboration with the student club, whose 20 members painted and glazed the tiles to fit his artistic vision, Wirtz appeared humbled by the accolades. He suggested it was his honor to be part of creating something meant to represent, through his club, the highest aspirations of peace and goodwill inherent in the human heart, transcending race, religion, and creed, the peace poles, serving as vehicles to carry the message out to every corner of the earth. As a Rotarian, Wirtz shares the organization's belief in the noble cause of peace building and conflict resolution. The International Service Organization recognizes no peace exists where people are starving, have no access to education and literacy, are victims of disease, or have limited chances to earn a suitable living. In closing, Wirtz dedicated PHS's Peace Pole, a similar one was donated to Bradshaw Mountain High School, to the future doctors, nurses, engineers, teachers, bankers, and administrators, peace builders, educated at Prescott High School. For French and AP psychology teacher Kathleen Cherry, the Interact Club advisor for the last 5 years, said she is awed by the club's generosity and the students' investment in bringing this peace symbol to life. Like her club leaders, Cherry hopes this peace pole proves a legacy to future generations. The ceremony on Friday was for Cherry yet another crowning moment in her 18 years at the high school that will come to a close with her retirement as of high school graduation Friday, May 23rd. Everyone can believe in peace, Cherry said. Class of 2025 Interact Club President Sophia Brown applauded the Rotary and Wirtz for their generous donation to the high school, to its present and future students. She also read aloud a poem written by her younger sister Isabel, a sophomore who was unable to attend the ceremony. In this world, peace is a choice. Peace is not something that's going to happen without action, reads a final paragraph in Isabel's verse, penned to celebrate International Peace Day last year. In Isabel's words, peace as a noun is a feeling of love, safety, and community. Peace can be the rainbow following a harsh storm. Peace can just be the quiet after one's sister stops playing the guitar, she said. She accepts that everyone might define peace in different ways, yet her vision of peace that equates to serenity requires everyone to act. I think we can all agree the world would be a better place if we all focused on making peace not a noun, but rather a verb, she concluded. You're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Prescott Public Library Corner. Prescott Public Library celebrates our 50th anniversary. A Wagon of Books Starts Our History by Paula Fortier, special to the Courier. The culmination of our 50th anniversary comes 5 to 8 p.m. May 30th with our Fest in the West celebration. We will feature live music and performances, food vendors, a Touch the Truck area, lots of youth activities on the back lawn from 5 to 7 p.m., a resource fair, and a large book sale hosted by our amazing sponsor, the Friends of the Prescott Public Library. This month, as part of our celebration of our library, I am welcoming guest writer Kristen Kaufman to fill you in on some of the library's history. I also invite you to visit the library viewery in May to see the great exhibition of our history. Now, over to Kristen. Prescott had a library since its inception. As the story goes, Territorial Secretary Richard McCormick rode into Prescott in 1864, his wagon loaded with 300 volumes of books, ranging from geography to law, several of which from Governor Gurley's personal library. But these books could only be checked out by government officials. As early as 1870, the Prescott Library Association formed for the citizens of Prescott, but they banded and disbanded as they rode economic waves. At one point, they rented a place inside the Bashford Building, facing the Courthouse Plaza on Gurley Street, and at another time they were in an old schoolhouse on Cortez Street with the gift of 3 years' rent paid. The Palace Saloon hosted a reading room for a short time, and in 1891, the Masonic Lodge advertised their intention to open a reading room to the public and would accept donations to support such a space. Everything would change in 1895 when the Monday Club began. This group of educated women began a literary society in Prescott with the intention of bringing in sophistication and civic betterment. Because there was no library in town, these women started first by meeting in each other's homes. In 1897, the Monday Club became the Prescott Library Association and appointed a board of directors. By 1899, they moved back to the Bashford Building, this time with a library of 556 volumes. In 1899, Julia Goldwater, president of the library board, wrote to Andrew Carnegie. Carnegie, at one time the richest man in America, had grown up an impoverished Scottish immigrant and devoted his retirement to building as many libraries as he could. Goldwater said, "In no place could such a room be more needed than in Prescott, with its large floating population of young men, many of whom cannot afford to keep their own rooms lighted and heated, and therefore have no resource but the saloons and dives, for there are no innocent amusements in the town." Carnegie said that he would give the latter $4,000 to an $8,000 project, and the Monday Club accepted. But then the fire devastated everything. On July 13, 1900, fire swept downtown Prescott, burning down much, including the Bashford Building, and everything the Monday Club had collected. According to the Prescott Weekly Courier, "Now that places of amusement and recreation are in ashes, the library committee is determined to put up the building as soon as possible for the cheer and comfort of the public. Since every new building will be a betterment on that which it replaces, the library must be good, worthy of the risen city." It would be 3 years before the Carnegie Library would be completed. Meanwhile, the Bank of Arizona on Gurley and Cortez allowed them to rent space temporarily with the mining exchange in the basement. When the Carnegie Library opened its doors November 23, 1903, there were 1,300 books in its collection. The stained glass window on the second floor was crafted by Edwin Weary of Chicago and dedicated to Mrs. E.B. Gage, who died in the previous year. There was no paid librarian on staff until 1914. Until then, the Monday Club staffed and ran the library. The Monday Club continued to take in donations of books from the citizens of Prescott and to host fundraisers such as balls and operas. In 1906, a chain gang from the nearby jail was commissioned to pave the sidewalk out front. The collection at the library continued to grow to 17,000 items by 1958, and then once the Yavapai County Bookmobile was purchased in 1968, the Carnegie Library was the central hub of book distribution to the Yavapai Library District. It was a good problem that the Carnegie Library was outgrowing its space, but it was a problem that needed a solution. Next month, we will look at the solution as the Prescott Public Library moved to the corner of Goodwin and Marina Streets. Contact Paula Fortier, Assistant Director, at paula.fortier@prescott-az.gov with your questions or suggestions for Prescott Public Library. That's all the time we have for the Prescott Daily Courier. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Catherine Hammond. Thanks for listening.